Welcome to the Money Advantage Podcast, empowering business owners with the permission to think differently about money so that you can consciously choose to live a meaningful and fulfilled life now. Our passion is making money simple, fun, and doable, helping you feel great about your money and getting your money working for you so you can thrive.
Hi, and welcome back to the Money Advantage Podcast. Today, we are going to be diving into part two of the comparison and contrast between typical financial planning and prosperity economics. I'm Rachel Marshall, and I'd like to welcome Bruce Wehner to today's show. Thank you, Bruce, for joining me today.
Hi, Rachel. Let's have another good episode and build on this prosperity economics.
Awesome. So I'm just going to recap for any listeners who might be coming in as this being your first episode. Last time we talked really about the why behind why we do what we do with our money and kind of where the messaging is coming from in the typical financial planning world and why we see things differently and really want to offer this alternative of prosperity economics to somebody who wants to take control of their destiny, increase their control, increase cash flow starting today, and really begin to live this life that they enjoy starting now and not just waiting for hopefully maybe sometime in the future being able to retire because they've given up control and ultimately have no confidence for the future. So Bruce, is there anything you want to share in kind of setting the stage for what we talked about last time as we come into discussing part two of that comparison and contrast?
Right, and I'll just wrap up and actually repeat what we talked about on the last podcast about the difference between typical and traditional financial planning. Kim Butler, who has started the prosperity economics movement, which is a collaboration amongst financial professionals from all across the nation and actually Canada also. I'm not sure if we've gone to other countries yet, but she has this idea that we are going to work in a collaborative method to make the financial services industry better. And her ideas is that typical financial planning, which started 30, 35 years ago, really where the industry took off, has really failed the American people. And that's failed for a variety of reasons, because studies show that people don't feel good about their finances, but it also shows that the average person only has between $27,000 and $37,000, depending on where you're getting your information from, save for supposed retirement. And traditional financial planning would be from prior to 1980, where people really would continue to work in their own businesses, where they wouldn't rely on putting money away out of their control. They would put it in the banks. They would put it into life insurance policies. They would put it into cash flowing situations. They would put it into precious metals. They would put it into a lot of different places. And so we're going to talk about the difference between typical and traditional planning. And the final thing before we dive into this is that, listeners, again, we're welcoming anybody that wants to listen to these podcasts to think differently about how you maybe are getting your information from different places. You should be scrutinizing all your information, including our information. But this podcast is really for somebody that says, you know, I don't know what's wrong out there, but I want to start looking at things differently, and I want to start taking responsibility for my own life and not have somebody else say, well, you can't trust yourself. You have to actually put money away where you can't touch it for years and years and years, and then we'll give it back to you, or we'll incent to give it back to you in small pieces for the rest of your life. So that's kind of a quick recap on the theory of typical versus traditional.
That's excellent. And I do want to encourage you, if this is your first introduction to us here at the Money Advantage Podcast, to really go hop back to episode 5, where we laid all of that groundwork in what is prosperity economics? What is that tension that a lot of people are seeing right now and wanting to have more say in their future and more sense of control and personal responsibility? And we also then went through the first half of kind of a delineation of what does typical financial planning believe and what does prosperity economics believe? And so I'm not going to restate and go back through that original list. So you really want to go back to episode 5 to grab that. But I do want to say prosperity economics is really all about putting you in control. And we're going to go ahead and continue that discussion and really just be able to bring a few more things to light that we're going to add on to what we talked about before. And the last thing that I do want to mention before we do that is that the reason we're talking about why is that principles are so valuable. It's not just about figuring out where you want to go, but why you want to go there in the first place. And as we become increasingly conscious as a in our society today, we think a little bit more about our thinking, metacognition, if you will. And we need to not just be aware of our own thinking that leads us to do certain actions, but we also need to be aware of the thinking that is driving the main messaging that we're getting from other places. And so as we're influenced by the media, by Wall Street, by the government, by the messaging coming from many different places all around us, we want to understand what is behind that and what are the principles that are driving that type of strategy. And so today we're digging deeper into that why behind typical financial planning and prosperity economics. So let's jump in. We're going to go line by line here. So with typical financial planning, you're in a position where you are living only on interest. So you're at the mercy of interest rates with your fingers crossed that you won't need to use principal. And just a little bit of context around that. A lot of times when you look at the typical financial planning conversation, really that comes back to how do I plan for retirement? This season of life where I'm no longer going to be working a job and having my income come from a paycheck, and it's going to instead come from my investments. That conversation has to assume a lot of things. One being, how much can you save today? How much rate of return are you going to get on that money? What is the inflation rate that you expect to see? What is the tax rate you expect to see in the future? And how long do you plan to live? And if any of those assumptions end up being incorrect, which most of them will 100% be incorrect because they're just assumptions and we can't control those things in the future, our whole plan ends up being wrong. But that typical way of thinking about retirement planning then has us accumulating this pile of cash, and then at some point in the future, turning that cash into cash flow and only living off of the interest, because the way that typical retirement planning would work and would say this is that you can only withdraw a certain amount, and the number is close to about 3% of what you can withdraw from your principal and not deplete your principal. Because if you have your principal creating interest and you deplete the principal, then you're going to have less and less interest available for you to be able to use every month. And so that's kind of what that means, where we're talking about living only on interest. That would be in the future at your retirement, after that retirement date. Now, prosperity economics is going to contrast that and say we want to spend and replace principal. So we're getting that permission to spend the principal, not just the interest that comes off of the principal, but actually use up and consume the principal itself, and building a flexible and sustainable way to live. And so prosperity economics is having a lot more surrounding your financial life and in your personal economy rather than just a pile of cash that you've accumulated. You have a lot of other pieces surrounding that that allow you to then spend the principal. Bruce, do you have anything you want to share on that?
Yeah, just a couple things. Excuse me. There's going to be a couple people out there that are listening. They're going to still be stuck in the old mindset, and they're going to say, well, you guys are saying you're just living off the interest of the principal, but my financial guy says we're going to actually pare down our principal over my lifetime, and then at age 96, I have a 93% chance that I'm still going to have money at 96 or 95 or whatever they figure it out. In other words, they're gonna pare down your principal to make up for a lower interest rate that you're going to be drawing off of that. Now, that certainly is a strategy if you want to use it, and if you believe you're comfortable with not a 100% chance of having money at whatever age that is, 94, 95. But when we look at many of the people, listeners, they're not comfortable with uncertainty. So interest rates have the traditional way of looking at interest rates was actually much more sound before our federal government got involved into manipulation of interest rates. But now, because we do not have any idea where interest rates are going to go, then people are having much more uncertainty. So they used to say a safe rate to take out of your accounts was 5%. You mentioned 3%. I think the actual number, of course, who knows what the actual number is. I think the actual number is about 2.8% is kind of the agreed upon amount. So you can see where that has changed over the last 20 years. So if we cannot even rely on the what's agreed to take upon in a mathematical way so that you cannot run out of money, then the best alternative would be to find a way to actually produce cash flow so that you would have a sustainable way of lot to live, even if you live to 100, 105, 110, so on and so forth. So yes, interest rates are something that people should look at, but it's not something that they should just focus on and nothing else.
Absolutely. And Bruce, I really like how you mentioned that many people are uncomfortable with uncertainty. And I just want to reassure you as the listener out there that none of us should be comfortable with uncertainty. I mean, especially in our financial life, when you look at having a plan in the future that you know is going to work and having a guaranteed source of income where you know what your income stream is going to be and you are personally in control of that, that gives you a lot of confidence for the future. And so the value of certainty has many, many facets of it. One of those facets is that when you have confidence for the future, because you have certainty, you function differently in your life, because now you're not looking at this fearful way of living. Like, what if I run out of money? And what if there's not enough? And I can't even spend money on a steak dinner today. I have to go to McDonald's instead because I'm scared of spending too much, which is what the typical way of financial planning leads people into, because you have a set amount of money that you are really afraid of depleting. Mm-hmm. And if you spend too much today, if you enjoy life just a little bit too much, then you may not be able to have anything left when you are at the end of your life. But at the same time, we really want to be able to enjoy life.
Right.
And so what's the point of retiring if you can't really enjoy it?
Right.
And so I just wanted to bring that reassurance back that the value of certainty of knowing that I have cash flow coming in today, then as Bruce mentioned, that doesn't cause you to run out of money at age 92 or 97. You could in fact continue on a sustainable way of living without that constriction and fear of uncertainty. So having certainty is extremely valuable in my financial life as well as in everyone's that I've ever spoken to.
Yeah. And, if it's not extremely valuable to people, then it's great if you want to listen to the podcast, but we're going to talk about more about certainty than actually speculation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's dive into the next one. So financial planning has money staying still. Assets are accumulated into accounts where they sit and they're financially stagnant. In prosperity economics, on the converse of that, money is moving. This is a personal economy that's alive and well and having money flow in and out of accounts. Now, I am an extremely visual person, and every time I hear someone speak, I'm always thinking about what this looks like in my mind. And because of that, this is one of my favorite ideas about money that just really helps me to understand well. So if you had a river of money, say this was your income, and it's flowing into your life, this is the input, if you will, and it's a nice big river, and then it goes off into various channels, and those are all swamps. They end and there's no flow through. It just sits and is stagnant. This could be, I'm putting money into one particular account. This is money that I can only use for retirement. This is money I can only use for college planning. This is money I can only use for my long-term care needs and for nothing else. This is money I can only use for whatever. We're shutting off the flow of our money. And so when money stays still, we know that in a river or a water scenario, that's going to grow a lot of slime and muck and yuck on top of the water, and it's probably not going to be healthy or fit for drinking. And so instead of that, we want to have money flowing through. So we want money to be moving, not just accumulating in a stagnant location where it's still, but flowing through. This is money flowing through accounts, whether it's through your savings account, through your checking account, through your life insurance cash value, through a property that is cash flowing, and you have money going into that property, but you have cash flow coming out, and that's all connected. So we want money to be moving where it's alive and well, and on the banks of a river where the money is alive and well, you're going to have flourishing and thriving and clean water that's fit to drink. So I just wanted to throw that analogy in. Bruce, do you want to add anything there?
Well, the government has discovered that this is the best way to provide services, whether you agree with their good services or not. But you know, if I provide value to somebody, they pay me, then I have to pay taxes, and then I go and use that money that they pay me to actually go purchase something else at a business. That business now has to pay taxes on that same money that originally was from the service that I rendered. Then they pay vendors. Those vendors use the same money that was paid to me originally, and then they have somebody ship it to me or ship it to them. They pay that company to ship it. They have to have a distribution way, so they hire a computer consultant to actually set up, and they keep paying money on the same dollar over and over and over. And so taxes are paid on the same dollar over and over and over. So that same thing can be worked in your own personal economy, where you can keep money flowing in your own personal economy, and you can have $1 do multiple things for you.
Yes, absolutely. And that's called the velocity of money. And so the more times you can have that money work for you, as opposed to it came into your personal economy and it left your personal economy never to be seen again, the more times you can churn it or recycle the same dollars in your personal economy, the more value that you have. And so that's another way of having money move with velocity. Thank you for bringing that in here, Bruce. That was very good illustration.
Uh-huh.
So next we look at, in financial planning, dollars are doing only one job. And we've alluded to this multiple times throughout the last two podcasts. But in typical financial planning, either a dollar is slated for emergencies or for education or for retirement or for major purchases, but not all of them. And you can spend each dollar for one purpose only. And it's this kind of compartmentalized and segregated way of thinking about our financial life. Now, I don't know about you, but in my brain, nothing works in a segregated way. They had this old illustration of the difference between men and women's brains, which is very interesting analogy. And I'm not sure that that's actually the way that it works today. But I see every part affecting every other part. And now, granted, I am a woman, so maybe that plays into the way I view that. But at the same time, we want to not have our money compartmentalized and doing only one job. We want, instead, with prosperity economics, that would say dollars are doing many jobs. They're used for flexible and multiple purposes. Bruce, what do you want to share there?
Yeah, I think I've had to train myself to think differently about this. When my wife and I originally, in 1986, when I was 23 years old, I was actually trying to figure out how we could get enough money accumulated to actually purchase a home. And so we actually used a old budgeting method that I just cringe about nowadays, where we would take folders and we would say, okay, we're going to put all this money for rent in here. We're going to put all the money for, and we actually used physical cash for electricity, gas, insurance, groceries, miscellaneous items, savings, and we also used for like entertainment, so on and so forth. And then when we would pull it out and use it for those different things, and then at the end, if the end of the month came and you want to go see a movie, and we would go to the entertainment folder, and if there was nothing left in there, then we couldn't see the movie. But if electricity, instead of being $30 that month, was $20 and we had an extra $10, we would leave the $10 in there because we'd say, well, what if electricity is going to be more next month? And so every dollar was compartmentalized, and we were living in a sense of scarcity because we were afraid to touch any of those dollars, because if we did, then we would not hit one of our goals. Instead, if we would have just said to ourselves, let's put all this money together, let's use it, let's take on our own responsibility. If we want to go to this movie tonight because we really think we need it, maybe we're just going to delay purchasing a house another month or another 2 months, but at least we made that decision and we lived the life we wanted to at that particular time. So when you compartmentalize things, you get into this idea that I can't touch this or I can't do this because it's going to affect me for the rest of my life, when you forget that you have to live your life right now.
Bruce, that is a really, really great illustration. And I think in any position where any of us have ever been tight with money, there's choices that we have to make about how we're going to use that. But I think sometimes budgeting, and again, this is a whole nother episode that we'll bring out in the future, but when we budget so rigidly like that, and I have personal experience doing the same thing in our own life, and then figuring out how instead we needed to say, well, let's recalibrate on a monthly basis and figure out, does money need to move from one account to another account to adjust for the choices that we want to make instead of just what we have to make because we set that in place. And so really, I think that goes back to a point that you brought up earlier at the beginning of last show, Bruce, that you were talking about when we put a plan in place, we want the ability to adjust and be flexible so that we can account for any range of possibilities that happen along the way, as opposed to saying we locked it in, it has to stay exactly like this, and there's no flexibility. And so continually revisiting and saying, do we need to make changes, or do we need to spend differently? Do we want to spend differently? Do we want to invest differently? And allowing ourselves that room for growth and becoming a more insightful person in the future than we are today when we set the plan in motion is really necessary.
Yes.
So lastly, we want to talk about the difference between financial planning, really looking to a professional planner as the expert, where finances are represented as something confusing that should be delegated, versus prosperity economics, really looking at clients being empowered. Now, with prosperity economics, we have money being demystified, not thrown behind that dark curtain where no one can understand it, but really coming out into the open and having education-based approach that builds financial confidence. And honestly, I could talk about this for a couple weeks, but this is one of my favorite things about money. And this really comes back to why we're doing this podcast in the first place, which is keeping money fun, simple, and doable. Unfortunately, there's a lot of jargon that happens in the financial industry, a lot of technical words that are used, a lot of confusing ways of thinking that brings in conflict and separation and doesn't empower people. And so really, we want to remove that. We want to say money is simple if we can have a way of thinking about it that brings clarity so that we can move forward and take action. And so I think that comes back to many of the points as well that we were talking about, who's in control and who is empowered. And are we asking the question that we don't believe that we have the ability to be in control, versus can we become the person that we do what it takes to gain the knowledge and the skills and the education so that we can take control of our financial destiny? And so, Bruce, what would you like to share around that?
Well, I think unfortunately, the industry has attempted, whether they did it on purpose or subconsciously, to try to convince people that this is too complicated and you need us. And they've done that by using jargon. They've done it by producing products that have many, many aspects to it. Steve Perman here in our office and I were helping somebody analyze an annuity the other day. And Steve finally just sat back in his chair and said the same thing that we always say, is that, you know, all of these annuities by good companies are basically the same. It's just how they package them. Some of them give you more dollars early, but not as much dollars later on. Some of them give you more dollars later on, but not as much early. Some of them give you a higher death benefit, but the trade-off is you don't have a great guarantee. Some of them incent you to actually not turn the money on for a while. But they all basically come to the same conclusion, and that conclusion is, how much of a guarantee are they going to give you out in cash flow over your lifetime? And so if you really can boil that down for a client that says, you know, these are all of these principles that these annuity companies are doing are all basically the same. They are going to give you lifetime income, but they are also in business to make money, so they can't do it without a strategy on their part. So here's the differences between this one, and this one. Now, you're smart enough and you understand which one of these would you like to have. And so that's where the education component comes in. But most people, I shouldn't say most people, that would be not necessarily a correct statement, but there are a good amount of my clients that come to me and say, oh, I know this is too complicated and I'll never figure this out, so just tell me what to do. And I say, well, if that's the case, then you need to go somewhere else, because I am going to sit here and help you and educate you understand how each one of these aspects work. And then finally, Rachel, when you think about money, it really should be simple, because it's just a means to exchange commerce. I don't know about you, but you know, I'm a few years older than you, but when we were on the schoolyard as little kids, our money was baseball cards, or it was marbles, or it was our bologna sandwich when we were in the cafeteria. And we would say, you know, hey, can I have that toy? I'll give you three of these baseball cards. Or can I have your pudding? I'll give you my bologna sandwich. And it was just an exchange to get a commerce or a service. And money's the same way. So people have been doing this since they've been little kids, just exchanging something that they believe is worth something for a good or a service since they were a little kid. The same thing, money is not worth anything. It's not backed by anything. Our current money is not backed by anything. It's only what we believe it's worth. And then we trade it for a good and service. So it really isn't that difficult to understand basic money.
Bruce, that's a stellar way of putting it. And I think we have been conditioned to believe that we can't take control and responsibility because it must be too hard. And I think that that's completely wrong. And really, who better to be in control of your life and your destiny than you? And our goal is really to put you in that position of control, because we believe that you're the best person to be there. Nobody else can make sure that they arrive at your intended destination than you. Nobody else can live your life and create the fulfillment and the meaning that you want to create. And Bruce is absolutely right. When you're talking about money just being a token or symbol, a certificate of that exchange of value. Yeah, it's a symbol. It's not the real meaning. The real meaning is you and I exchanging value in something that you value, that I've provided to you, or something that I value, you've provided to me. And as that exchange happens, money just certifies that that actually happened. Money is not the real meaning. The real meaning is the people behind the transaction and what took place in that transaction. And so if we think about money from a much different perspective, about saying, how can I create value for others? I mean, simply, that's what investing is all about. How can I use my skill set to provide something of value to others? Even when you're looking at providing real estate, you're providing housing to a particular community of people who need housing. That's a value transaction. It's not a investment class as much as it's a value transaction. And so really we're coming from that perspective of, we want to help you enjoy your understanding of money, because if we can help you to feel good about your understanding of money and walk in that abundance and prosperity. You'll be able to create more value and more cash flow and have more control in your life today, as opposed to staying away from it or fearing it or being in a position where you feel like money must be bad or something that you have to hand off to somebody else because they're more capable with it. And so I guess behind the money conversation, you're hearing this thread of, we really believe in building up people to believe in themselves and their own skill set and having that confidence to step out and use their skills and abilities to create value for others. And we really want to empower you to do that. So I hope that you can kind of hear our hearts behind the money conversation is so much more of a conversation about the value of you as a person.
Yes, it is. And it's really neat when you've been doing this for several years, to actually see people that you've been working with start to figure that part out, where the thing that I tell people all the time is, I want to give you permission to actually spend your money, because way too many times they've been told by people that, you know, you can't spend your money, you have to save it, you have to be beware of these situations. And the reason that they're stuck in that is because they don't realize that they can continue to add value, or they can hook themselves up with somebody that continues to add value in their lives, and they feel confident and trusted and worthy of spending that money. And it's really rewarding when you do that, and that's what we're trying to get across in these podcasts, is that you can actually change your mindset to a more abundance mindset rather than a scarcity mindset.
Bruce, that's stellar. So what we've been discussing over these last two episodes is really this way of thinking about your money in terms of, why are you making the choices that you're making? And what influences and what beliefs are you allowing to influence your perspective about money? And we want to provide this context for understanding what typical financial planning may be, what principles and means and philosophy might be guiding a lot of that conversation versus what principles and beliefs are guiding the ideas behind prosperity economics. And so I want to be able to help our listeners to understand the abundance, value creation, opportunity-seeking perspective of prosperity economics that puts money in your hands today, creates cash flow now, says money is meant to be used, and cash flow is meant to be created today, and you're the best person to be in control, as opposed to the typical financial planning conversation that says somebody else needs to take control of your money, don't touch it, set it aside for the future, plan for retirement, and hope things work out. So as we've had that part of the discussion, I want to move over to giving you something that you can do to put this into action, or actionize it, as I like to say, in your own life, and really allow you to get real results. Because it doesn't matter if we just talk about it here, we want you to be able to prove to yourself that this works. And so I would like to give you today a copy of the guide Financial Planning versus Prosperity Economics, and you can grab that link in the show notes or in the blog post at themoneyadvantage.com. And I would love for you to be able to peruse that on your own and then share with us your thoughts and comments. How did you already relate with some of these questions or the comparison that we have brought into light in these last two episodes? And how did the discussion maybe help you think through some of your own concerns or thoughts about your financial freedom and what your money journey and your money story looks like? I'm also going to let you know that you can go over to themoneyadvantage.com, where you can subscribe to our podcast. And if the conversation is valuable to you, please go ahead and rate and review that on iTunes. We'd also like you to join our Money Advantage community if you are interested in getting these podcasts and then also blogs, videos, and tools that we're going to be putting out from time to time that we believe are going to be helpful to helping you implement these ideas. If there's any particular question you have about this concept today or anything else we've touched on, we'd love to hear from you. And you can reach out to us directly at hello@themoneyadvantage.com and send us an email. You can share your thoughts, your feedback, or any particular questions you have. Or you can request a free financial picture conversation to help you discover dollars that are flowing into and out of your control, help you strategize ways to get more dollars flowing back into your control, and so that the end result is really having more money to retain and utilize and more to pass on during or to future generations. So thank you today. We really appreciate you joining us for this podcast. We hope that it was educational and empowering and that it added value to your life and your business. So again, this is Bruce and Rachel. Special thanks to you, our listeners, and we can't wait to come back and share another topic with you on the next podcast very soon. My friends, success leaves clues. Model the successful few, not the crowd, and build a life and business you love. To learn how high-performing entrepreneurs 10x or more returns on liquid capital without giving up quick access to cash, go to themoneyadvantage.com/liquid-capital to get The Unfair Advantage, your 20-minute, easy-to-read guide on maximizing your savings.
Thank you for listening to the Money Advantage Podcast. Today's show notes and resources are available for you on themoneyadvantage.com. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review. If you have any questions or desire to speak with a qualified financial professional after listening to today's podcast, we encourage you to reach out to us at hello@themoneyadvantage.com or check us out at themoneyadvantage.com. The opinions and views expressed here are for informational purposes only. This material is educational in nature and should not be deemed as a solicitation of any specific product or service. All investments involve risk and a potential loss of principal. Kalos Capital Incorporated nor Kalos Management Incorporated offer tax or legal advice. Please consult with a tax advisor or attorney for advice regarding the impact on your portfolio. Securities offered through Kalos Capital Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC, MSRB, and investment advisory services offered through Kalos Management Incorporated and registered investment advisor, both located at 11525 Parkwood Circle, Alpharetta, Georgia. E3 Consultants Group is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Kalos Capital Incorporated or Kalos Management Incorporated.